Rob Jones. Hello.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening.
Now, we just tried to do a podcast with a very special guest. And it didn't happen. We were meant to just record it and then we were going to do an intro. What that meant was I have no idea what show number we're on. Although I just looked and we're on show 184.
We're racking them up. Oh, yes.
So we're pretty good at ducking and diving. we will bring you the guest because it's an awesome guest. But for now, it's us two. Sorry, we're going old school on today's show. And of course, if anyone who knows who's been listening to the podcast a while, old school also means segues.
Segues. I thought you were going to say old school means we are ill prepared.
Well, that's just a given, mate. I think we're not even prepared in the new school, but old school is just you and I chatting segues. And the world is back in order, mate. Everything's normal again for everyone.
Everything's normal. Races are happening. People are happy. Everyone's out in Europe racing, running. Everyone's on holiday. The world is good. The world's good.
Don't watch the news.
Where is everyone?
No, you know what else everyone is?
Oh, everyone is. I think you're going to say everyone is well hydrated.
I was going to say in Hokas.
Oh!
We could always also use hydration. Everybody is in Hokas, though, actually.
True story. I said it in the intro to last week's podcast. When we were in Chamonix 2 weeks ago, four people bought brand new Speed Goats when they were in Chamonix. And loved them.
You're in the birthplace of Hoka there.
In the Alps. Yeah. French actually, Alps. They're in, and now they're actually sponsoring lots and lots of races. And so lots and lots more people are jumping into Hokas.
Yeah.
Saw a lot of them on the trails as well, actually.
Yeah, I bet you did. I saw a lot of people in them in the airport. I flew back from the UK on Monday. Mm-hmm. Maybe Tuesday morning. And even just people just standing in the queue, I was like, Hokas. Unreal. I wore Birkenstock slides, new slide, lightweight, perfect for traveling.
Did you get new ones? Because your ones are in one hell of a state.
Yeah, they're a bit of a problem. I still wear those because just the comfort level is unreal. But for traveling, I went with the new, this is definitely not a Birkenstock plug, but their new lightweight, I don't know what they're called, slides, basically. Do you know what I never realized? How much my feet sweat walking through airports. And you know, when you're walking and your shoes are making noise, like...
squeaking.
Squeaking. Yeah. Well, I was that guy walking for like... And my terminal was like 20 or something. So I walked 20 terminals like... I'm just going to put my headphones on and pretend that this is not me. My feet were just soaking by the end. I was like, is this normal? Like, does this happen in trainers? Then they swelled on the plane. Then you're trying to get your slides on with swollen feet. I was like, this is probably one of the biggest errors I've made in my traveling career.
Is it just your feet that sweat or is it just all of you?
No, just my feet, soles of my feet.
That's very strange.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, I want to wipe them, dry them on the carpet of the... of the airport, right? In the lounge bit, but that's pretty gross.
No. I have something to talk about flying and traveling. I would see traveling, especially if you're going to go to the UK or you're coming back from the UK to Dubai, it's an endurance event, isn't it? Well, it is, because by the time you start, you check 100%. In, you're talking 9-10 hours of traveling.
Yeah, plus adding the drive to get to the airport.
Plus the drive, so longer, right? If you're doing an endurance event, you would not put on your best fancy clothes. You'd wear something comfortable. What blows my mind is the people that I see on the plane that are wearing suit jackets or I'd call them church clothes. Okay, you know, your classic Sunday dress. I'm in the most comfortable shorts, a baggy shirt or t-shirt, flip-flops or slides or super comfortable shoes. I take my shoes off and I'm walking around in socks on the plane.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time. You see these people looking very uncomfortable and miserable sitting in their suit.
I'll defend them with this. We don't know what they're doing straight off the plane.
Maybe.
maybe some people are going to church straight out of the airport. You know, like when I see people in business suits, I'm like, you're leaving here and going straight to a meeting.
But then you're going to be in a crumpled suit because you've been sitting in it for 8 hours. So why not hang it up, get changed in the toilet?
I don't agree with it. I'm just saying that's what I think is happening. The other game changer as well is that I had an early flight Tuesday, booked a hotel at the airport, in the terminal, wake up, go for breakfast,
roll out
straight into the terminal. It's amazing. None of this, oh, wake up at whatever time and get a taxi and then you're not sure if it's there. And nah, I'll just sleep in the airport. Thanks.
A good business idea that I came up with be like in a suit made of like elastin. So it's super four-way stretch. It looks smart, but you can like squat snatch in it or something. And then you'd be able to...
a suit with resistance bands built into it so that you can get a workout in while you're queuing.
I'm not sitting down. I'm training my hip flexors.
It's like arm raises and there's like friction in the shoulders so that you're doing like lateral raises and you're getting a workout.
Oh my God. Right. We've now lost 87% of our listeners. So...
Well, because they're all making notes about how to make millions from our ideas.
We'll take 2%.
Listeners will, who knows, well, will probably realize that we've not spoken in 2 weeks. Because you're in the UK now. I was in the UK after being in Germany. You were in the Alps then while I was in the UK. Now you're in the UK and I've flown back to Dubai.
Yes.
Anyway, we're back.
We're going to segue to Germany, shall we?
Shall we go to Germany first? Yeah.
Let's go Germany.
Okay. You've already talked about Chamonix, actually, with Marcus, haven't you?
Yeah. Let's talk about Germany. So you've just come back from Germany, Nuremberg, in the Bavaria region, where you completed Challenge Roth, which is an Ironman distance triathlon. That's the right way to say it, isn't it?
Iron distance triathlon.
Iron distance.
Challenge branded.
So it's challenge-family.com or something is the website.
Yeah. I mean, I should probably look up more research around the company. I don't know, but I remember we looked at some history of it while we were there. And Challenge Roth used to be Ironman Roth. And before that, it was like a family run event, but it's been going since, I think, 1986.
Wow.
So it's 30 years old. And back, I think it was, maybe 2008-ish, maybe a bit before, it turned back into a challenge event. So Ironman lost it or gave it up and Challenge took it over and it became Challenge Roth. And it's touted as the race that's, you know, if you're not going to Kona and you need a big race to get your teeth into, Challenge Roth is the one you go for. It's what we'd call one of the majors, you know, like a London Marathon or a New York Marathon, a Boston Marathon. You've got the same thing within triathlons. You've got Ironman Kona, Challenge Roth, probably Ironman Nice would be another big one. Maybe that's about it. Like 70.3 Worlds, that type of thing. They're big ones that if they're hard to get into and if you're going, you're going to have a good time. And Roth, to get into Roth now, they have 3,000 places. They open... There was a video of this on social media, actually, just last week. They opened the space. So I think the first draft, if you like, is about 1,000 people get a slot, but about 10 to 12,000 enter it. Basically, the minute they open the lottery, so you have to go into a lottery in order to get given the chance to enter the race. Within 40 seconds, it's sold out.
Wow.
40 seconds and they show it, they press go and then it's just like done.
That's so you need to be on the ball, like clear your meeting calendar, be sitting
it's like
at your
trying
laptop.
To get into those who know festivals, it's like trying to get Glastonbury tickets.
Yeah.
It's mad. And then you've got, I think, a month to decide whether you're going to do it or not. And then they open it again. I think it's on like December the 1st or somewhere around there. So there's two intakes. And to start there, last year, So to put it all into context, I'd raced Ironman South Africa where my goal was to get a slot for Kona. And then I wanted the right to refuse Kona. I didn't want to go to Kona anymore. But I wanted to show myself that I could have gone if I wanted to. Anyway, I turned it down and I thought I probably won't race another full distance. And then someone said to me, Challenge Roth opens tomorrow. You know, there's never any chance of getting in, but I always apply just in case. So I was like, be quite cool. Maybe I'll have a crack. So I played the refresh game and then immediately got an email saying, you've been selected. So then I accepted it, paid. And then on the pay page, you can enter something called the sub-9 category where you get a refund if you go under 9 hours. So you basically say, yeah, I'm hoping to go under 9. And if you do, you get your money back. And when I hit that, I was like, I'll hit that. You never know. I then thought, actually, that's a really good goal for me to try and go under 9 hours at Challenge Roth. And then, yeah, that's the goal itself was nice to have, but I knew the process behind getting there was going to be the interesting part. And I didn't switch into Roth mode, if you like, until the start of January. So I had July, September, about probably 4 or 5 months left of last year where I just really enjoyed training, just did what I wanted. I didn't do anything, did I? I didn't really race for anything. Mountain biked, went to Kenya again.
Yeah. Just had fun, right? Time.
Yeah.
Had fun and stayed consistent.
Yeah. And that then set me up to be really thinking a lot in as January approached and I knew I was going to switch into this mode of getting ready to Roth. I was like, I'm having such a good time. I'd started to get on top of my Achilles issues. That was getting fixed. I was enjoying running again. I was pain-free. And I was like, if I approach this race as I've approached races in the past, it's not going to be good. I'm not going to have a good time. And that's where I set the goal for a reason to try to go under 9. That was the goal. But the way I was going to do it was by taking a different approach than I had in the past and not being all in at all times. That's what I kept telling myself. You don't need to be all in at all times. Just be all in when the training is on. And when you're away from training, don't worry about it. And so I wrote actually a blog on, I finished the blog on this, which took me ages to write. And it's over 3,000 words long. And I'm sorry it's long. Some people like long reads, others won't read it. That's fine. But it needed to be that long to explain everything in it. But my average training hours from the beginning of January to the 24th of June, the race is on the 25th, my averaged 13 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. I think your max, your lowest was 7 and your max was 17, if I remember. I read it last night.
Yeah, max was 20 hours, lowest 20 was hours. 7.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, looking back on those numbers just proves to me that, you know, I did it all for the right reasons. And, you know, if you reflect in the time of what happened between January and Roth, I became a partner of the business, which was huge, but also brought with it more responsibility. You know, I got married. Forgot about that one. Got married. We went, you know, we didn't not go on any trips because of training. I went and raced in Oman at Xterra. I didn't get injured once. I didn't get sick. I didn't miss training through burnout. Like nothing took a back seat, really. Boz and I used to be on meal plans. We actually stopped doing meal plans. We started cooking more. Like we probably spent more time at home, gave ourselves more time back. Like in pretty much every pillar, things improved. And I was training for an Ironman. And it was really interesting to watch my performance and my numbers as it went on. And I'll definitely say this, a lot of times I was doubting what I was doing. And I would get to a Sunday and go, oh my God, I only trained 14 hours this week or 13 hours this week. Like shit, I should have done a long ride there. I should be running more. But when I remembered what I was doing and why I was doing it, I relaxed and I didn't question it. And the closer I got to the race, the less I questioned what I had done. And I also was smart with, I was condensing a lot of training. So like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I would probably fit in maybe 10 hours of training and then I would be recovering in the other days. I stopped trying to run too hard at track. I was really selective with what sessions I did around community and things. And that made sure that my energy tanks were topped up and we'll get into the race. But one of the things that was a theme throughout the day of the race was I just had energy ready to go. I didn't spend it in training. I wasn't finishing training. You know, there's days in the past where I would get back through the door after training on a Saturday. I'd been out there for 5 or 6 hours and I would just come in and just lie on the floor and be dead for half an hour to 40 minutes. And that's not fun for anyone to be around you. And I would just lay there and wait to cool down, wait to come back around feeling normal again. And then you just go into a coma of tiredness.
And then, that then feeds into the rest of your weeks. Then you're not able to hit the rest of the week with the intensities that you want to, because at the weekend you've pushed too hard almost. But I'd say, like, noticing the difference, if you like, in your, let's call it your temperament, between training for this block versus training for previous Ironman, it's almost like you wouldn't know that you were doing an Ironman training block.
Like
you were full of energy the entire week, happy, excited, just like a normal human. Whereas previously you'd be like, you'd definitely notice that you were fatigued and tired, maybe a bit irritable because you overtrained or you weren't getting the sleep or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Low in energy. Yeah. So the difference was huge.
Yeah. And it, you know, I felt it as well. And I think that was one of the main points of the race was when things got hard, I had the energy to go through it. Like I hadn't done a lot of battling in training. Like, yeah, there's tough points where, you know, okay, I need to now go and, you know, I had to do 3 or 4 hour rides indoors because when it was, you know, the beginning of June when the heat got up, and okay, yeah, you can look forward to that a little bit, but part of you has to, you have to motivate yourself and that requires energy. But I got it done, and I knew because I had my reasons for it. And, you know what? Okay, Tom, do you want to wake up at 3 a.m. and go and ride outdoors? No. Cool. So then take the sleep, get up when you need to. And the cost of that is you got to ride indoors and it's going to be 3 or 4 hours.
Mm.
So once I started looking at it more like a conversation with myself rather than, oh, the plan says this, so you need to do it. The difference definitely switched. And same with the swimming. It was like, do I want to swim 5 times a week? Nah, I don't. Do I want to swim 3 times a week? Yeah. When you do swim 3 times a week, are you going to nail every single session that you set yourself? I'll try. I'll do my best. And that's what I did. So I didn't swim more than 10K in a week, but every session, every time I got in the pool, I had complete purpose of what I was doing. And it meant that my quality of it, and that's across the board in my swim, bike and run, in training was just so much higher.
So the volume was less, less, quality high.
Yeah. And but the caveat to all this is, this is my 10th year of long distance triathlon racing. Mm. And I haven't missed any, you know, I've never taken a longer break than 3 weeks during that time. So people listening, this isn't the podcast that's going to tell you that you only need to train 10 hours a week or 13 hours a week and you can do your best performance. No. So you need, like, I have had 5-6 years of training 20 hour weeks. Like, my physiology, my base is good. And so maybe it's just an anomaly that I could get away with this race doing less. But I think the main point that I want to tell people from this race is, if you put your health first, if you put happiness first, if you understand what you're doing and why, and not just blindly following things because it's the way it's always been done, I can guarantee you will far outperform your personal best. I PB by over 38 minutes.
It's a huge PB.
Yeah.
Where did the PB come from? Have you broken it down into swim, bike, run?
So my best swim in an Ironman before was an hour. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't. Yeah, I swam an hour in Estonia. And this one I did 58 minutes. Now, you're in a canal. It's flat calm. I had a good group around me. But also tactically, I was really astute. I wasn't trying to race anyone. I used the people around me to pull me along. Estonia swim, where I swam an hour, was also a lake. But I remember swimming that swim as like a race, like, oh, I'm racing you all. Mm. Obviously, wetsuit and stuff in that lake as well. So the conditions weren't massively different. It was a bit windier in Estonia. But 2 minute PB is pretty epic in the swim. And I did way less swimming this time. Way less. In Estonia, I was injured on my run. So I wasn't running. So I was just swimming. I think I was swimming like close to 20K a week back then for it. So I don't know. Figure that one out. Swim coaches are going, uh-oh. But in my swim, this time round, I did like 12 weeks of pure technique work. Mm. Couldn't tell you what my CSS was until about 6 weeks out. I was just swimming, technique, technique, technique. There was nothing going on with trying to hit certain times or, you know, getting, you know, milestones of distances and things. No, I just swam technique focus for the first 3 months of the year. Then I moved it to the fitness side of things. And a lot of people love intensity in the pool, but I was really aware because I'm so inefficient in the water, intensity in the pool wrecks me from a recovery standpoint because I'm using every single muscle to try and move faster. So when I get out of the pool, I've burnt a lot of energy trying to hit fast paces. So I said to myself, what's the goal? Well, I need to swim around an hour. What's the pace to swim around an hour? 132 per 100. So that's what I'm going to train around. And as long as I'm comfortably coming in on those times on longer sets, I'm not going to try and get quicker. There's no need to.
Yeah.
It's fine. The bike, I knew I had to do about 4 hours and 40 minutes something. I knew that was an absolute must if I wanted to get the chance of going sub nine. And in the past, I think my best bike split has been 4 hours 50 something, probably at South Africa or Estonia. It's funny, I can't really tell you, but it was not near four hours 40. And this time round, so same bike, same wheels.
That's like 37 and some change, isn't it? 37K an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I use the same bike. I have a Scott Plasma. It's the old style. It's 2017 model. It's not new. I have the same chain rings. The front end's the same as it always was. I've not got one of these 3D cockpit things. It's probably what most people would look at as a pretty old school time trial bike nowadays. But that's what I used. And I wasn't tempted to try and get an upgrade or anything. Although the new bikes, they're absolute super bikes. Like when they come past you, you just think, yes, no wonder you're flying past. That thing looks unreal. The aerodynamics on them now, the integration in them, the stiffness, like they're unbelievable. But I wanted to do it on my current bike. And I figured out, okay, to ride at 37K an hour on the course that Roth is, which is 1500 meters of climbing and can be windy, I need to hold about 260 watts normalized. So I trained to hold 270. So I trained to hold more or what I could hold on my best day. But I knew I actually needed to just hold 260. And so in training, you know, the last thing I need to be doing is base rides. Like I have the base and I mountain biked all through the winter and I rode my road bike. And so I didn't go and do the normal long ride every weekend. Every other week, I would do a long ride of anywhere from 4 up to 6 hours. And the reason for that is just to be able to hold the position that you hold on a time trial bike for that length of time. And I probably could have done more there, like towards the end of the bike in Roth, my neck was sore and it was getting, my hip was sore actually for the entire time, which I think comes from swimming into biking for me, which I hadn't done any of in the build up. But I was at 260 watts by the end, or 258 watts. I actually looked yesterday at my heart rate data. I had a 2% heart rate drift over the entire 4 hours 40. So it was obviously very sustainable. And I'd averaged 37.5. So could have gone quicker, but that's not the point of an Ironman race, right? If you only know you've had a good bike when you finish the run. And as you will see in every long distance triathlon you go to, the people who do, or some people who do very fast bikes, it'll soon hit them at probably 15 or 16Ks into the run. They'll go, uh-oh, I think I've, you know, spent too many bullets on the bike there. So I was comfortable being overtaken. I was comfortable, you know, working to my pace and not worrying about people around me. I say in the article, I'm really not comfortable with people drafting. It's so shit. Like, it's ruining the sport because the difference is so high. We know that you save about 40%, 30 to 40% of energy when you're in the draft. And there are packs of people going around these courses and they're riding at 38, 39K an hour. They're doing like 200 watts and it's just cheating. You're just cheating when you do it. And yet there's times where you're going to get caught. And I had it. Times where you're coming into villages and, you know, people in front of you slow down and you catch them up. But when you're on a straight road and there's absolutely no reason to be up the person's, you know, within 12 meters, you drop back and you ride what the rules are. And that was just not happening. And I say it in the blog, is it was getting to me. Like, we talk about my temperament. When something winds me up, I sometimes find it hard to control my temperament. Mm-hmm. And I could feel this was getting to me. And I just thought, Tom, you know, it doesn't concern you. You're here to race. You're here to do sub nine. You're not here to do a place. Like, I couldn't care less where I came in the field. I was just there to go in the 9 hours. But it was winding me up so much that I realized I had to deal with it in some way. And instead of trying to, you know, overtake them again and do what they were doing to me, which was basically coming past me and then cutting in really hard. Because once you pass the person and pull in front of them, it's the person behind responsibility to create the gap.
Yeah.
So what happens is you get a group of eight riders come past you. They're all cutting in front of you. And you then lose, you probably lose, I don't know, you could probably lose easily a minute because you then have to stop pedaling and wait for the gap to keep opening. Then, because that person's put an effort in to get past you, they slow down. So all you do is then ride at like 60% of your effort, 12 meters off the back, and you're doing, well, a speed that isn't in your control. So you then, if you get annoyed and you treat it the wrong way, which I've done in the past, you then overtake them and do the same thing to them. And you just create this really bad scenario. So I just rode up to the guy who got closest to me and had a word. It was a pretty angry one. But I said, I won't say fully, but I was like, basically, if you can't ride your bike, what are you doing? You know, piss off in an F-bomb way. And he looked at me and said nothing. And I just thought, of course you're saying nothing. Because if you're weak enough to draft around a bike course, you're definitely so weak that you're not going to say anything back, you know? So I just shouted at him and I never saw him again. But unfortunately for that guy, he got the wrath, but I could have said it to 20 people, you know?
This, I don't know why it just popped into my head, but it reminds me of when I see guys in aero positions riding around El Kudra on their TT bikes. I think, why are you sitting slap bang behind someone? Why are you training to draft? Again, yeah. They're out for a group ride. It's a bunch of friends. You know, maybe they put the weaker riders at the back, but you know, if they train it, they're going to use it in races. Just go out and do those rides on your own.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. It's just full weakness. And there are times you can't avoid it. You know, like I say, when you're coming into areas that slow you down and things, but that Roth course is a beautiful, beautiful course. And there is no reason for people to need to draft like they do.
Yeah.
And you 100% know who you are and how you're doing it. And if you don't know, go to your power profile and have a look where power is low and speed is still high. And that's you. That if you're that one of those people, that's you. And what you're doing is you're creating a really unfair platform for everyone else. And what other people think is, well, if they're drafting, I'll draft.
Mm.
And yeah, we've seen pictures of the pros drafting, but the pros are on the 12 meter limit and they have motorbikes riding next to them, policing it. And you still get a draft 12 meters back. But these guys were, you know, nose to arse drafting.
Oh, yeah.
It just ruins it. It's not fair. But yeah, said my piece on that. I've said it before and it's not, you know, we can give Ironman a bad name. It's not Ironman. It's triathlon. It's triathletes. It's the athletes who buy a disc wheel before they've, you know, unless you're riding a 40K TT flat out close to an hour, you don't need a disc wheel. You know, what are you doing? Oversized jockey wheels. relax, train more.
Yeah.
No, train more. And your ego, like your ego's getting smashed. So you're drafting in races. Stop it. Do the work first.
There was quite a few guys with disc wheels that could perhaps have lost 12 kilos as well first.
Yeah. And I've had this conversation with, you know, with Wolfie from Wolfie's Bikes. And he's like, yeah, but you know, if you can get the advantage, get it. Fair enough. I see it. If you've got the money and you want to pay for the advantage, then I'm cool with that. It doesn't affect me. But what does affect me is when there's groups of drafting. This region at 70.3s is one of the worst places in the world for it, but it happens all over the world.
Mm. The run.
Yeah.
The run. You'd ridden some of the bike course, but you hadn't run any of the run course or not Nothing. Had a look at it. And you paid for Nothing. This, I think.
Yeah. So I think it's a blessing and a curse, really, because when I'm on what I would call like old Tom mode of training, was like, I'd know every detail of the course and I would be defining how I want to feel at this point and have a full plan of how I want to feel here and there. And that's fine. But when something happens to you that knocks you off your plan, it can really throw you. And so I really didn't want that. And that was a theme of my whole race, really, was I knew what I needed to do before the swim. And I kept it very simple to like five or six things that really mattered. And I didn't worry about anything else. I didn't wear a watch for the swim because I didn't want to see my time when I exited. Because right or wrong, when you look at the time after your swim, it can throw you. If you're expecting to see 1 hour and you see 1 hour 10, it's going to throw you. Like if you expect to see 55, and even if you see 55 and then you come out and you see 56, oh my God, I'm a minute behind. Stress. Like, don't need stress. So I didn't look at the run route because I just wanted to take the race as it was. I rode a bit of the bike route because there was a downhill section that had switchbacks and I wanted to know that my brakes were good and test the bike was working okay and understand how the switchbacks felt. And I looked at the bike route to understand a little bit around wind direction and things, but I didn't do anything on the run. So I came into T2, transition two, where you go bike to run. And obviously I knew my bike time was 4:44. I knew that my power had been good and it was a huge win for me. And I was like, okay, now the goal, I thought in my best day, I could run 3 hours for the marathon. I trained around that pace, but I hadn't done a lot of miles and that probably got to me in the end. If I could change anything from the block I did, it would probably be to run more, but then where would I run more? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I was maximizing my week for running as it was. So, you run out of transition. By the way, the volunteers there are the best I've ever been to in the world. They're unbelievable people who only want you to do amazingly well. They're so helpful. They're so good that, so yeah, I say at the end of the blog, like if you can do that race, do it purely from the atmosphere of not just the crowd, but the atmosphere of the volunteers and things as well. But I came in, it's a race where they take your bike off you, which is really helpful. So gave them my bike and then ran into the tent, chucked on the old Hoka Carbon X3s and put my watch on for the first time for the day. Now in my mind, I was meant to put my watch on and look at the time to know what I had to run, but I completely forgot to. I put my watch on, press go, and I was like, let's go. I didn't think I need to look at the time to know here, but you run out, you start running down a hill, then you run up through a forest area, and then you're on the canal. And it wasn't until I was coming onto the canal that I go, oh, I didn't check the time. Because I didn't know I'd swam 58. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. So I checked the time and it said, I think it, can't remember exactly what it said, but it was like 12 minutes past one or something like that. So I was like, oh wow, I knew I had to be on the run by 12:55. I know I'm 20 minutes in, I'm ahead of schedule. And so you're then on an out and back section of the canal, and I saw a few of the pros. I saw the winner and he was on a mission, and then I saw, you know, all the people ahead of me coming back. Some of them are looking like absolute death. And you're wondering how they're even going to get to 10K. and others are looking like they're absolutely flying, and you're like, wow, are we even in the same race? I knew that I just wanted to be calm, like get to 10K in 43, 45 minutes as I've planned to, and just keep ticking them off, ticking them off. And there's a favorite session I do before an Ironman, which is 3x10K with 5 minutes sit down between. And that's all I'm trying to execute is that run. Because the last 12Ks, I know it just comes down to how much do you want it and and what have you got in your legs. So just get me to 30K and I'm going to be happy. So that's all I was working on. You then get the inevitable people in front of you who start to either walk or slow down, and that feels good to get past them. And of course, you've got some people coming past you as well who can sometimes help you if you just, you know, jump on to their rhythm and helps give you a little bit of a kick on if you match their rhythm and things. But you don't want to match it for too long if your heart rate starts to spike on it. So I knew my heart rate needed to be around 150, certainly early on. It was hot, which I don't remember it being hot, but apparently it was hot. And my heart rate was high. So I was like, right, just relax. And once I got the canal finished, it was like a massive tick, you know, huge box tick. So I was like, amazing. Now I'm running back through Roth and the crowd is going to build me. And I've got, you know, about 15K to go, 16K to go. Little did I know, although Roth, when you run through Roth Town, it is amazing. The last 10K, you're running up a hill, then you run down, then you run up a smaller hill, then down, then you go around like a mini pedestrian roundabout where there's a massive party going on. And then obviously you repeat that. So you run up a small hill, down, run up a big hill, down, and then you're running into the finish. And as I hit the first hill, I was like, wait, this wasn't in the plan. Like I didn't train hills. So I had a real battle then to start to think, you know, okay, you now have, I think with 10K left, I had about 55 minutes to go. So it would have been 3 o'clock with 10K to go. And you think 55 minutes to do 10K, no problem. But then just put into context, you've been exercising for 8 hours and you've got a hill you've got two hills to run up. It's 30 degrees and it's time, your body's starting to now, you know, try and shut itself down. And when your body's trying to shut itself down, one aspect is you've got your muscles telling you we're tired, which is why you can get cramps, you can get muscle lock up, things like that. But the other part that's trying to protect you is your brain. So your brain starts saying to you, hey mate, you can relax now. You can
slow down a little bit. It's okay. Yeah. You don't need 9 hours.
You don't need it, mate. 9:02 still sounds good. Mm. You know what's the problem with that? That's okay. Oh look, that guy's walking. You can walk. And I just got to that point and was like, okay, here we go. This is now it. This is everything I love about endurance sport is going to happen now. Is everything's going to tell me to stop and slow down, and I'm not going to listen. And I don't want to eat another gel, but guess what? I'm having a gel. And I started taking like cups of Red Bull. I mean, you drink a sip of Red Bull, but I drank Red Bull and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to fly. This is it. You know, obviously the Red Bull is doing nothing for me. Nothing. Like it's a sip, but I'm like, this is it. You're going to drink this and feel unreal. And I was like, right, one rule, you're not walking. There's no way. If you collapse, you collapse. If your legs stop working, they stop working, but you're not walking. So I was getting up the hills like that. And then on the way down, you're like, ah, downhill, we may as well save some energy here and just cruise down. I was like, I can't, I don't have that luxury. So I was just hammering it down the hills, basically trying to just slam my foot into the floor as hard as I could to create as much momentum, to get as much free speed as I could on the way down. On the way back, the last downhill, that meant my quads started to lock up. So it's like trying to run on stilts. Yeah. So you have to, then I'm thinking, okay, my leg is finding it hard to bend. My quad is locked. Pull with my hamstring. Pull your hamstring hard. So I'm trying to run like skinny, you know, like kick my heel into my ass, hit the floor harder, lean forward. I thought to myself, just lean forward, you know. Hokas were made because runners were looking at cyclists going, they have amazing momentum because of wheels. Like that's why they invented the Hoka shoe, is to try and give it a wheel effect as you're going down the hill. So I was like, use the shoe, Tom. You're wearing the shoe. Oh my, like, you're lucky enough to be supported by this company that gives you shoes. Use them. Use them. Stop thinking about what hurts. Use the shoe. So I was just leaning forward and trying to get the shoe to just work for me. And I looked at my watch with 3K to go, and I had 15 minutes or what I thought was 15 minutes. And I looked back at the data. I had, I think, 14 minutes and like 15 seconds basically to get it done. And then I was like, awesome, I can do this, because I've watched people at Track Tuesday for the last 5 years do a 3K absolutely as hard as they can and try and beat that 15 minute mark. You know, I've watched it. I can do that. I can do it. And so I just went for it. And some guy was running next to me and he's like, we've got this, we can do it. And I'm like, yeah, man, like, sweet. Well, I don't know what he was taking. And then next minute he just drops, just goes.
Like, well, drops off the back.
Just drops. I was like, oh, well, he's not on anymore. And then like 5 minutes later, he's flying past me again. He's like, yeah, we've got it. I think he was a Swedish guy, massive guy. And I was like, what is he doing? Like surging, going. And then I thought, maybe I'm surging. Like, maybe I'm going and falling back and he's running constant. I couldn't work it out. Anyway, we hit the last sort of kilometer together and his energy was just unreal. He's just hammering himself, absolutely hammering himself. And he went ahead and he crossed before me. And another guy who was with us, he was just behind me. But I remember turning the corner and thinking, I have about 2 minutes to run. I mean, you guys were watching the tracker, right? It was so close.
We
it was like,
yeah. So we were doing the same calculations as you were, but looking at the live tracker, and they give it, the tracker was cool because it had like a 1 mile, a 2 mile, 3 mile, and then dropped down to like, they had like 1K increments as well. So I was refreshing this tracker. I had like 5% left on my phone. So I was like, oh my God, if it dies, we're not going to know where he is. Like, this is down to the wire. We were standing in the stadium. Me and Boz were twitching. We looked like we had ticks because we just couldn't stand still. Going, yeah. It's got to come through in about 60 seconds. And if he doesn't, then it's all gone to pot. And then it tells you the average speed as well. And the average speed, I don't think, was quite right. You know, it averages out for the block. And so we'd figured out what you had to do average pace wise in the last 5K. And it was showing slower. So we're like, oh, he's going to be so, like, it's going to be 1 minute either way, whatever happens. Yeah. This is like, we were just buzzing, absolutely buzzing.
Yeah.
And then you're sort of, somebody would come through the coral in red and black and white and we'd be like, there he is. Oh, it's not him. Fuck. I was just that on repeat.
Yeah, well, I felt it. It was like that. It was like the only way that this is going to end well is if you just give it everything. Mm-hmm. Like, either fall and drop down before the line or you're going to do it. And I just basically was as much as you can sprint at the end of a marathon, that's what I was trying to do. And I remember hitting the carpet and suddenly feeling, oh, the floor feels different. And then I'm like, I'm on the carpet. And then you've got two corners left to do.
So 90 degree bends, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, in the pictures, I'm looking behind me and I don't know why. I can't remember it. But I remember crossing the line mainly, but I think my memory comes from videos from you guys. I don't remember if you run up a ramp. I don't remember what it felt like. As I crossed the line and I didn't see my time. So I didn't know whether I'd done it or not. All I knew was I just had to get off my legs. So I just fell forward. I think I just fell like flat down. And then I just remember this woman standing over me just being like, do you need medical attention? And my quad was cramping, my psoas was cramping, and I was just fully hyperventilating. Because you're just, I think you're so relieved that you don't have to sit in that pain anymore.
Mm.
That I'd been sat in for about the last hour. And I mean, you know what it's like to do an Ironman. It's such a long day and there's so many things to think about. And you've sat with your own thoughts for 8, 9, 10, you know, you name it, 15 hours that you're just kind of, you're like, oh, I'm back in civilization again.
It's you're like almost- you're permanently switched on. And when you cross that finish line, it's like a release of, I can relax.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's now time to relax.
Yeah. And so I just went into the that state. I don't know how long I was on the ground for, but I remember trying to get myself over to the barrier to sit up. And by the time I'd done that and I looked at the timing board, two or three other people had come in. So then their times are up, but mine weren't.
Mm.
And their times were saying like 9:04, 9:05. I was like, oh no. But they must have been in the wave before me.
Yeah.
And then I looked at Marcus and gave a thumbs up and a thumbs down. And he was just shouting at me. He was like, yes, mate, you did it. I was like, holy, like that was the most mental ride I've ever been on. And to have done it by 30 seconds just adds, I don't know. I don't think I would want to do it any other way. Like 30 seconds.
30 and things seconds.
Went wrong. Things went wrong. My goggles came off in the swim. I went the wrong way on the bike. I probably wasted about 40 seconds because I missed a turning and people waved me around. My chain came off pretty much every time I got to the top of a hill and changed back onto the big ring. And even in the run, I stopped to sort my laces out because they didn't feel comfortable. So things didn't go right. I lost a gel that I refound on the run. And I was just like, 30 seconds, what?
I always wonder if things hadn't gone wrong and you had those extra seconds back and you had maybe 2.5 minutes to spare, would you have pushed in the run and would it have worked out? But because you were so down to the wire, you had to give absolutely everything. So it did pan out the way it did.
Yeah.
I think about things like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. And I was in the bin, as people who know is like to say, but to the point where afterwards I didn't want to, sitting down here, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink. In the end, after about half an hour, I managed to go and drink. I think it was like cold chocolate milk and some apple juice was all I wanted. Like they were like, oh, you can shower, you can have a massage. I was just like, I don't want to do anything. Like I was just in pain. You even came looking for me in the,
I know, in the tent. There was I managed to find an athlete wristband just discarded on the floor and you'd been about an hour. I'm like, shit, well, let's go check that he's actually okay. So I snuck in pretending I was an athlete to try and find you, but I couldn't even see you. No idea where you were.
At that point, I think I'd got to the shower. But I think it was just a true tank empty affair. And that's probably the nicest feeling. And even yesterday, I got on the bike for the first time and I just thought, wow, it feels good to get on the bike again. I was like, I wonder how I'd be feeling if it had been 9 hours and 30 seconds.
Mm.
Would I be getting on the bike with like, I think I know I would be getting on thinking, where am I going to race next that I can go under nine? Whereas now people are like, what's next? I could happily not do an Ironman again. Probably won't. Never say never. But I'm like, do I want to work harder to go quicker than that? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a great time. If you look at what other people are doing, the winners are doing 7.5 hours.
The guy that eventually won it, didn't he break the world record?
Yeah. Well, the Roth record.
The Roth record.
Yeah. And so I'm not like, it's just the fact that I changed the way I was training for the better, clearly, and it worked. That was like, that's the most rewarding part, I think.
So will you take that now and carry that forward to future races?
Yeah, well, it depends what I decide to do. Like I have the Xterra World Champs in the Dolomites in Mulvaneau in September, but it's a whole different race. It's probably going to be 4 or 5 hours and it's like full gas from the start. So you train differently anyway. But, and I train myself basically how I train my athletes. That's the only difference. I stopped thinking I was special of needing certain volume and time, and I stopped training with emotion of wanting more volume, wanting to say, yeah, I did 1,000 TSS this week, or I did 20 hours this week. I just stopped it and I was like, Tom, what do you actually need? What makes you happy? Are you going around Alcudra grinning your face off, or are you going around going, oh my god, that I've got another 3 hours left and then I've got to go home and sit and make conversation with Boz? Like, nah. And I was like, but am I waking up, two days a week, going for a walk in the morning with the dogs and Boz, and like getting home happy and then motivated to go off and train? And all these little things, like I had one day on the weekend off pretty much every week because I wanted it.
Yeah.
Like that's what I wanted. So that's what I did. You know, that's the biggest difference. And it obviously did the work. And probably some people are thinking, wow, what if he actually trained like a proper Ironman? He could go even quicker. Don't know. Doubt it. Like I've tried that. Tried that and it doesn't work for me.
Yeah. And you got to remember as well, you do have a full-time job. You've got commitments. You've got a dog. You've got a wife now that you want to spend time with. So you're much like a lot of the athletes that we coach.
Exactly. So why am I trying to treat myself differently?
Yeah. And it's very easy to maybe get sucked into that mindset of I can train like a full-time professional, and you can't.
Nah, you
can't. Really, really can't.
And I would love to if I was a full-time athlete, but I'm not, so I don't want to. I think that's the difference. But yeah, I think a lot of other people went a lot faster, but it doesn't motivate me to, you know, oh, why don't you try going for, you know, get under 850. Like, nah, you're all right.
Sacrifice isn't worth the reward.
100% no. And that was my learning with Kona, right? Was, okay, you need to go to Kona because that establishes me as a proper triathlon coach. And then slowly over the years, I realized, actually, all these coaches going to Kona, they're no better than me. Then it doesn't make them a better coach. You know, that's wrong. That's not right. And the realization is going under 9 was an amazing experiment. It doesn't make me any better of a coach. It doesn't make me any better as a human being. But it just helps me to understand one of the biggest learnings I've ever had as a coach or an athlete is often, more often than not, less is more.
Mm. It's funny that you probably could have learned that without actually doing the race.
Could you? I don't know.
The way you were feeling, how you structured the training, the fact that every element of your life around your training was better following that training style. You almost just needed the race just to prove that it had worked.
The race was the performance measurement, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. The race was the performance measurement and yeah, couldn't have written it any better really. And even if I knew, even knowing the times throughout the day would maybe even hindered me. So even not knowing the times, even the mistakes of it, it was the most raw effort I could ever give because I wasn't playing to any sort of knowledge of where I was at any times. It was just stick to your plan, do what you can. That's it.
Before we finish, I want to know or try and describe Solar Hill for people that will never experience something like that or want to experience something that might get them to sign up for this race.
I think, yeah, there's a guy called Tim Noakes who's got a theory called central governor theory. And it's theory that it's our brain that stops our fatigue, not our muscles. Solar Hill, well, maybe people have experienced this, I think, in like New York Marathon, where you run over the bridge and Brooklyn Bridge, and maybe in a few other races where the finish line is so covered with crowd and things. But you're also at the end of a race, so that maybe is different. Solar Hill, when you get to it, you are, there's 10 rows of people either side of you. The wall of noise, at that moment in time, you are probably the fittest you'll ever be. And it's nothing to do with your physiology. It's because it's the thing that gets mothers to lift cars off their children. It's the thing that gets you or gets people to be able to do incredible feats under huge amounts of emotional stress. You ride up there and it feels like you've done nothing because the energy that they charge into you is just mad. Like if you've never ridden 2 minutes at 400 watts, go to Solar Hill and you'll do it. Like with the crowd, you know, and you have no idea you're doing it. You don't feel it in the pedals. Everything just becomes light. Everything drifts off. you're the fittest you'll ever be at that moment in time, because you could match a Chris Hoy effort on the track back in 2012, 2008. That's how I would describe it. You will never get that feeling unless you either go and ride that or the Tour de France.
Yeah. Some of the big climb. Yeah. I've only done one Ironman in my life, and that was Bolton. None of it was ever like that. Maybe sections of the run had big crowds, but they were either side of the road. This was, I could smell the sweat off the riders. You can tap them on the back or on the bum. It is like the Tour de France. They are riding right in your face, or running right in their face, as your video shows. Yeah. And it's just unpleased, safe mayhem, basically.
Yeah, everyone just wants the best for everybody there. And it's the same thing when you're a kid and you're looking at like a gap you want to jump over, and you're like, oh, I could never jump over that. And then your mates are like, yeah, you can. And you're like, oh, maybe I can. And they're like, one of them does it. And you're like, oh, I can do it.
Yeah.
And you've not trained to be able to jump further. In the space of 10 seconds, like, another human being has helped you realize your potential of what you can do. That's how I would describe Solar Hill. Is you have no intention of riding up there at 400 watts, but you have no other choice when you get there. It's not in your control. You can't. You have to put that energy that you're getting off these humans somewhere.
Yeah. Very, very good. Oh, fantastic. I don't really know what to say now. As a spectator, I'd no idea. I'd looked to the website, I'd seen some of the videos, but I had no idea the volume of spectators there would be throughout that course. And as a spectator experience, it was incredible. I mean, we did walk, I think we marked it up at about 35K throughout the day to get from one point to another. Everyone else had bikes, small oversight on our part, and there seemed to be no athlete buses or no spectator buses. So we walked everywhere.
It was not bad, but
absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I'd say it in the blog is, I don't know the performance benefit of having you guys there, but I would argue it was a massive piece to the puzzle to be able to hit and go under that 9-hour mark as I did. And yeah, I just can't thank you guys and all the Unified Endurance guys enough. And yeah, I still are getting messages from people, and it's almost weird to see what it has given people, but it's the same thing around, you know, jumping that gap when you're a kid and you think you can't, and then other people do, you realize that you can. And I hope that's the biggest message, is forget about the sub-9, focus on how the training changed and how the mindset towards how I treated myself basically changed. And I guarantee you, if you're dealing with chronic injury, if you're dealing with chronic tiredness, chronic stress, overtraining, if you're always frustrated with the results you're getting, it's not your training. You need to look at how you are dealing with yourself and how you're, you know, what are you trying to do versus what can you do? Look at that, and I've proven it. You'll get better.
Love that. That's a great place to end.
Done. Awesome. Done. This will come out on a Wednesday as normal.
On a Wednesday.
And then we have three guest shows on the way. It's exciting times for the pod. In the meantime, we'll be jumping in and talking our usual fluff.
I think we fluffed this one out quite well. Well, you did. I just listened.
Good. Rob Jones therapy.
Hey, Rob Jones, thank you. I'll send the bill.
Can I pay you in Training Peaks?
No, I take precision gels.
Oh, yeah. I've not got any left.
Ah, damn.
Good. All right, mate. Well, thank you guys for listening. And I would say, if this has maybe talked to you in a certain way, maybe give it a share to a friend who might need to hear it as well. I've written a blog, which I'll put the link to that in the show notes. And business as usual.
Business as usual. Have a great day.